Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Tite.
And I'm Bonnie North. Tonight, the Creativity Series at Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design presents furniture designer and builder Asher Israelo. Israelo was one of Forbes Art and Style's 30 Under 30 designers in 2012, and his visit helps launch MIAD's new minor in furniture design and making.
Israelo's studio is in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and he both designs and builds small-batch furniture there using a mix of woods and metals.
Israelo stopped by the studio recently to chat with us about his work and how he went from architecture to furniture making.
You know, it was a bit of an organic process for me. I started in a sculpture program at a liberal arts institution and then wanted more focus, started studying architecture, transferred into an architecture program, but realized that I was still missing that getting my hands dirty and really, you know, digging into the materials and understanding the techniques, the joints, the sort of the information that the material is giving you, as opposed to my architecture education was much more about design. And, you know, it was great in that respect, but it didn't really teach me a lot about how things actually got built, more what they were supposed to look like as the final product. So furniture seemed like the culmination of the two. It was a lot about design, and you really had to have a plan before you started and really work through the design and the elements. And then there's also the aspect of building it and responding to what you're making and really learning from the process.
I love what you said about understanding how the materials talk to you and how they work together or don't work together, and somehow figuring out how to create what you want, but not impose your will on something that doesn't want to go that way.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've definitely experienced trying to impose my will on materials that really don't want to do that. And they'll let you know pretty quickly, and sometimes not fast enough so that you get much too far down the rabbit hole before you realize that this is just not going to work.
So give me an example about something that didn't work like that. What material were you trying to do something with that just wouldn't go?
So I do a lot of metal inlay and a lot of metal structure, both hidden as well as exposed into wood. And those two materials do have somewhat of a history together, but they react much differently to one another. So wood expands and contracts based on humidity and moisture. Metal has a lot of movement primarily related to heat. And those two things actually work in opposition to one another a lot of the time. So it's really about figuring out how you can marry them, what materials, what adhesives that you can use. I built a chair. The first chair I ever designed was a complete failure. It was really exciting. It was a beautiful piece, but you couldn't sit on it because the the steel structure could not marry. It just never really fit. It was never tight enough. It looked great, but it never actually held the piece together. And, you know, it was part of the learning process. I have no formal training in woodworking, so even just understanding the construction of wood, which really, I think, is a lifetime of information that one can take on.
And metal, too.
Yeah.
I mean, people do those two things separately.
Right. Yeah. It's a lot of study, honestly. One of the guys I've started to work with who's working for me in my shop now understands everything on almost a molecular atomic level. And it actually does affect the way that he builds things, because he'll understand, you know, when you're milling metal in a certain way, it'll actually create the structure to go in a linear fashion versus a more porous fashion. And the wood, you know, there's only certain directions that you can actually laminate things to. So, you know, these are all fairly technical attributes to the materials, but they do actually affect the designs heavily and the way that I look at building things and the way that things can actually stay and, you know, essentially create quality where something will outlast the maker, which is always the ambition for things that are made.
Well, also, you're unlike a sculptor, unlike a painter, perhaps, you're making something that is meant to be used in a way that they are not. I mean, looking at something is one thing, and it's lovely, but you're talking about learning how to do all of this. Like you said, your first chair you couldn't sit in, so it made it an object that might have been nice to look at, but not functional.
Right. And to me, that was even if it was beautiful, it was still a failure because the design is a chair. It was not an art object. And I love art and I love design. And I think when the two come together, they can be something really unique and wonderful. But I think first and foremost, if you're working in a design field, you have to make it something functional. And then the elevation past that is where it becomes art. So first and foremost, I'm always concerned about the functionality of the object and how people use it. you know, there's a lot of understanding of social dynamics with furniture. You know, furniture in New York City is very particular. I realized when I was designing things for trade shows and primarily only showing in New York when I started building work, I was building everything very small, both for the trade show booths as well as New York City apartments. Space is a commodity. You can't build the 15-foot dining table and show, even though people really want to see that, they'll never be able to fit it into their apartments. So the first time I did a show in Los Angeles, everybody was like, why is all of this furniture so small? We need stuff to fill our houses. This chair is tiny. And I was looking at them like, whoa, this is a totally different mindset from what I'm used to. And it's just those tiny idiosyncratic things about the way people live in the different spaces and locations that they exist that really affect the design of the furniture and also how you think about going through the process of making it.
One of the things you have on your website, I think, is a really interesting description of the people who you hope to buy your furniture. You're creating things for the modern explorer. And so I want you to go down that rabbit hole a little bit and tell me who this modern explorer is and what you hope to bring out in them.
Oh, that's a wonderful question. No one's ever really asked me about the modern explorer before. I think that all of us are somewhat modern explorers, especially in urban environments. You know, the home where we exist, or at least for me, is you know, where you collect the objects that you find or that actually have meaning and sentimental value to your life. But then the rest of the world out there is really just, you know, it's what you're looking at. It's what you're interacting with and, you know, what actually shapes and creates the sort of foundation of your life, both aesthetically as well as functionally. So the modern explorer is, to some degree, anybody who's interested in the environment and really sort of exploring it and understanding, you know, going through, I guess, the different processes of their own lives, not as if it's sort of the rote, mechanical, humdrum, everyday existence, but something a little bit beyond that where they're interested and inspired by the things that surround them.
And so how does your furniture help them do that?
So I've been doing a lot of, I guess, inlaid motifs with mapping, and maps are definitely one of the tools of an explorer.
I love maps.
Yeah, I love the aesthetic of maps in general. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of people think that I know I do a lot of star map work where we'll inlay every single star map that we inlay is actually related to the history of the person's life. So when people commission us to do a dining table, they'll actually give us the day, place, and time that they want the star map to represent. So it's essentially inlaying a story of the person's life or something that's a little bit more subtle, but it's their own history. I don't know much more about star maps aside from that. I know sort of the history of the aesthetic and the way that they expand, you know, the different shapes of unraveling a sphere, which essentially a star map is an unraveled, the interior unraveling of a sphere, which is a very complicated math problem if you think
but
about it.
But I love the idea of it.
Right. And so you can really sort of play with these things because, you know, mapping, I think, has really taken on a new notion of something much more than just a functional, I guess, a functional object. Sure. It's more become artifacts now. We all have GPS. We don't even have to know how to read maps anymore. They're actually telling us how to move. So as they're becoming more obtuse, I think people are really realizing how much information they hold and reading them more like stories or books rather than as, you know, how to get from one place to the next. A lot of the maps, especially star mapping, since we've started understanding stars, are much more imaginative than they are realistic too. You know, you'll map the stars, but constellations are stories that are imposed on a night sky, and the interaction of those constellations are actually telling, you know, a lot of the history of the cultures that were telling the stories. So the deeper you go, the more information there is. And it actually, I think it connects all of us to some degree. You know, you look up and it's the same sky as what other people are looking at, and the sense of wonder that you have is no different than, I think, somebody across the world looking at the same stars.
Right. Oh, I think so too. And yeah, you're right. It connects us as human beings and our longing for something bigger and greater, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I think right now, especially with the star map stuff, we're in a new age of exploration where we have better imaging technology and, you know, the satellites that are going into space are enabling us to see things that we've never been able to see before. New galaxies, new universes, really, different ways that stars interact with each other and essentially being able to understand the universe better. So much like in the 1500s when we were starting to sail around the world and start to understand the vastness of what this world had to offer. We're just at the beginning to start to understand what the universe is showing us.
And I love the idea of bringing that back into the domestic sphere with furniture and having that be something that you can interact with on that very intimate level.
Right.
What you're trying to do with the furniture.
Because there's a tactile nature to the furniture that is ethereal when you're looking at it in the sky. And, you know, I think that's part of also the modern explorer notion is that explorers, you know, like natural history collectors, were taking things from one place and bringing them back to their home. So being able to take that one night sky from that one memorable moment in your own personal history and essentially inlay that into a table. The star maps are something that each individual gets to take home. And the fact that you can actually own this one day, place, and time is something that I think is really unique and special, both to star maps in general as well as what we're trying to propose with people and the way that they interact with their furniture. I think the more personal that you make the work, the longer it is. I react heavily against disposable objects in general, and everything that we try to make in the studio is ideally going to outlast the maker, outlast the user, and the sort of heirloom quality of it is already imposed because it's mapping the history of somebody's life.
And it allows all the rest of us to share in that, even if it's not our personal history, because I'm sitting there looking at the table, or I'm touching the table, or I'm sitting in the chair.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it also elicits all of these amazing conversations, too, which I think is really important about furniture. The objects that you surround yourself should be inspiring. They shouldn't just be functional. So one of the first times I showed... It was actually the first time I showed in Los Angeles. There was a guy sitting at the table, and he was touching the tabletop. Didn't at first realize that it was a star map, just really liked the pattern of the brass and the wood. And when I mentioned that it's a star map, and he's like, oh, you know, I'm not really interested in furniture, but I love reading science paper. And I was just reading about this one scientist who stared at this. Essentially, he focused the satellite, and it was with this all this new imaging technology. Or with all these new lenses on this one place in the sky that there were no stars. It was the first time a scientist thought to do that, really, you know, focus the lens directly on dark space rather than space that actually seemed like it had objects. And you know what they found after weeks of just peering into the darkness? Millions of new galaxies. And while he's telling me the story, he's pointing to a spot of wood that doesn't have any brass inlay on the tabletop and just sort of, you know, pointing and fingering at it as if, like, in that little spot of black walnut, there are millions of new galaxies, because it essentially elicited a much larger connotation context and sort of put us in a place. So I thought that was a really beautiful story that he was telling me, and it only happened from the interaction between the two of us and the fact that the table was between us.
Oh, I just got goosebumps.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, Asher, I'm so pleased you're here. Thank you so much for coming in. I can't wait to hear your talk.
Oh, well, thank you, and thanks for having me. It's been a wonderful opportunity to meet.
Asher Israelo is a Brooklyn-based furniture designer and builder. He'll talk at 6 o'clock tonight as part of the Creativity Series at the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design. MIAD is using the event to launch its new Minor in Furniture. You can see pictures of Asher Israelo's work and find more information about the Creativity Series at WUWM.com.
We will take another break now, and then, speaking of creativity, we'll chat with the creative team that's behind the world premiere of Unsilent Night. It opens this week at Next Act Theater. You're listening to Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio.